Today, I'm talking to Jorge Uribe of One Sotheby's International Realty in Miami, Florida. The agent who has broken the highest sales price in Miami by more than 2 times the former record price. The agent who is consistently between the number one and the top 5 agent in Miami. The agent who is consistently top 50 in the country. Jorge keeps things simple. Throughout the interview, his focus comes back to 3 things again and again. It turns out that what has given him the life true to himself, true to his values, are also the 3 keys that transformed him into a multi-billion dollar agent. We talk about the 3 keys to transform into a multi-billion dollar agent. Thanks for listening to the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. This podcast was created for real estate agents across the country to come together, sharing ideas to take your, their, and our business to the next level. All right, everybody, the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. Today, we have a long-lost friend of mine, Jorge Uribe, from One Sotheby's International Realty in Miami. You specialize in a lot of waterfront properties.
Pretty much waterfront properties all throughout South Florida. So I'm one of the few agents that does, not like these micro markets, like Miami Beach only, Key Biscayne only. I kind of do the whole gamma. So that's how I specialize in waterfront, but I do others. But my name's been known for the really big waterfront sales here.
So I'm going to make note, everybody, notice how humble he is. He's only been the top agent in the city of Miami or in Miami. He's only been a top agent multiple times. I think you've been like ranked at number up there towards number 32 or higher in the country.
Some good years, some not so good years, some good years. But yeah, all in all, it's been a great run at it for sure. You know, I try not to get too obsessed with numbers. I have fun with it, you know, and sometimes it's not fair because you'll have some of these years that you'll double end a $50 million deal and it just looks like you just sold $100 million like that. And then to try to get to $100 million, $2 million at a time takes a while. You know, so.
Greg, I was going to say, it takes a while to even get to that place and that level.
Yeah, sure.
So, like, tell us, you know, I want to talk about how you got into business, but let's not miss out on negotiating a $50 million deal and working with your clients and what your secret sauce is. But let's do start with, how and why did you become a real estate agent?
Yeah, purely by accident. Because I mean, my background was more finance and accounting. And lo and behold, I found myself a couple years unemployed in the early 2000s. After the dot-com internet boom, that was like the last thing. But it was awesome, actually. And I really say thanks to my wife because I got into real estate because of her. Because the hardest thing usually for a high-performing agent, for someone with a certain background, let's say, to get into real estate, it takes a while because you'll eat, you know, doo-doo for a couple of years by the time you make your first client, make your first, there's a big curve in the beginning to get any kind of money. So I was actually blessed that my wife had a corporate job, so she was actually paying the bills. So I could jump into, when I got the opportunity to meet this guy, Carlos Justo, which is a super famous superstar guy. He was like Robin Leach, Lessons of the Rich and Famous show and this whole thing. Rosie O'Donnell and the whole thing. So I started working with him and it was funny because I met the CFO at a barbecue, his partner, let's say, and he had gone to school with Jeanette. Purely like life is awesome in a sense of how sometimes you're at the right place, right time. I met them at this birthday party I didn't want to go to. And he's like, hey, Jorge, do you want to get into real estate? I'm like, I don't know anything about real estate. He's like, oh, I work with
Carlos. Wait, slow down. So Carlos said, hey,
no, Jorge, do you want to get into real estate? Irving Padron was a guy who worked for Carlos, who went to school with my wife, Jeanette. And we met into his birthday party and he was trying to start this new concept. And the concept was he wanted to take over the entire market in a team scenario. It didn't really exist in Miami. He wanted to get 8 super agents, none of them from real estate. He wanted to hire lawyers, bankers, ex-finance people, create a team of professionals, and then divide the entire market by this And I'm like, so he said like, hey, why don't you show up on Monday to the office? And I showed up and it was absolutely just mind blowing. I came from a corporate background and I show up and here's this like bold little dude in pajamas meditating with the team around the table. Like they were all humming away. And I'm like, what is this? It looked like a cult because Carlos always wore this like white pajamas, like linen outfits, almost like one of those like guru guys. So anyway, at the end of the day, long story, I don't want to bore you with the story, but
it was kind of like
hilarious. So, but he had something going. He had some really great lessons in life that I
could take it. Well, you got to take us back because you meet your first, you got to take us there for a minute. So you go to a party, you meet a member of Carlos.
This member of Carlos was so excited.
And was it Irvin or what was
Irving Padron? And he says, hey, you want to get into real estate? We're recruiting.
You're in their office and they're like meditating.
And so I'm like, okay, go to the office. And when I showed up to the office, here's this group of like six guys sitting around a circle on the floor with one of those, like, you ever see those, like the bowls that you, like you, it makes this bowl, like, it makes like a humming noise, like
doom. Yes, and it's the pottery. So
everybody's going around. Like,
she's a big man.
Everybody's going around with this like Buddhist humming sound with their eyes shut, basically meditating. And then they all went around the room saying like, what are you grateful for, Ralph? What are you grateful? And then they went around and then I was like, and they, Jorge, oh, you're new. Oh, what are you grateful for? And it was just like, you know, so it was just funny as hell. So it was just
what
like,
were you grateful totally, for?
I mean, I was blown away. For? I was like, I mean, I'm grateful to be here. I'm grateful to be alive.
Right.
It was like, anyways, it was funny. So pretty high performing. I mean, a lot of really good lessons about it. I mean, if anything I could say about Carlos was what I talked earlier about you, there's a couple things. I mean, I think one of the most important things that can really, I think, blow anybody away with it, I guess, is whether you're in real estate or whether you're any service industry, right? Whether you're selling shoes or a waiter or a sommelier or a realtor, is right. know your subject, know your things, know, and what are we selling? We're selling real estate. So Carlos was an absolute genius. I mean, he was gifted in memory. So the guy knew every single house in Miami from size of lot, who built it, who designed it, who lived it. He could go back four transactions. Like he'd be like, that house sold in 1960 to so-and-so, then sold 10 years later, flipped it to so-and-so, and then so-and-so did this and then sold it to so-and-so. And it was just like, whoa. I'm not as gifted, so I have to work at it a little bit more as far as like learning, constantly, you know, studying the market, because ultimately we get paid to be advisors. And the only way you can be a true advisor is if you really know your shit. I mean, you really need to understand the market, no matter where you are. And it's mind-blowing. You can be at a guy, at, you know, you could say the same thing about a banker or a lawyer, right? A lawyer that really knows his...
Right.
Yeah. Sorry. Did I say...
Yeah, I'm just listening.
Did I say the S-I-G? No.
Oh, you
am I allowed to say rude words?
We're not on the radio. Okay. And even in Atlanta, even in the South, we're okay with it. And we're going to transition into now. So you came out of kind of a corporate environment, right?
So I came, I mean, I studied accounting and I worked in general management. I ran a company, the Carrier Corporation, part of United Technologies. I ran their company in Chile for 5 years. So I was
their manager.
So I actually went to Chile, opened up the operations. And then from there, I transitioned to two internet startups. So I had a really good, let's say, corporate career, successful, did well, enjoyed it, but I found myself unemployed, but it's okay. I was taking care of my kids.
Well, I was the best. Cause now
I was Mr. Mom for 2 years and it was awesome. That's like today, my son's 22, my daughter's 21 and we have probably a pretty cool relationship because I was there taking them to school and all the men hated me because I was at the preschool, like working on projects. And then the moms would be like, why can't you be like Jorge? And he's like, because Jorge doesn't have a job. Anyways, no, I'm just kidding. But I was not the favorite in the men department. All the wives thought I was cool because I
helped. You go in from like corporate world to the meditating realtors on reality TV, by the way.
Yeah.
Wow. What about like actually like breaking into this and getting your first deal? Like how did that all come together and what did that look like?
A little bit of luck in reality. So the way Carlos did it, the way he divided our team is we actually it was, again, super high performance. So, for example, I was in charge of a neighborhood called Gables Estates, which is kind of like Coral Gables waterfront expensive. Mm-hmm. Ralph got Indian Creek. So-and-so got North Bay Road and Star Island. And what we would do, we would actually have to, let's say, understand the market really, really well. And then we actually had to pitch the team about everything we learned about the neighborhood. So every so often, I would have to present to my team, Carlos included, about, so I would have this map that I did back then. It was, you know, a lot of, let's say almost like a PowerPoint where I said, here's Gables Estates. There's 171 houses. It was founded in 1950, so-and-so. These are the 10 homes that are tearing down. These are the 10, whatever. I know so-and-so, so-and-so, and so-and-so. So I started to prove myself that I was the team member in charge of this. Now, what would happen over time, which is actually pretty nerve-wracking, is that if there was a listing that was going to, if a listing showed up on the MLS and I hadn't talked about it, I would get like strike one. They'd be like, how come you never spoke to that lady? How come you didn't know it was going to be for sale? Oh. So you would actually lose your neighborhood to the team if you proved that. Now, if you said, well, I talked to her, but she didn't like me, different story. At least you got in and you had the chance to present.
You've got to bring her up before.
Yeah, so you got to bring her up before, okay. And you had to know every single person that was, how long they lived there, how many kids, were they grown up, were they not? So it was a
and very that's 171 houses. Like you had to know every single
house. Yeah, so every single one. Wow. And then it started expanding and you started taking over. And then we also had something which actually I think is something brilliant for realtors. And I've kind of talked about it before in some other chats. It was something called, it's really accountability to yourself. But the problem with real estate is that we're all single agents, free agents, and the mind plays funny tricks on you. And it's hard to be truly accountable to yourself. So it's accounting every single minute, accounting every single hour. What exactly are you doing? I mean, how many times are you making a photocopy? If you go into the photocopier 20 times, why don't you get a freaking machine in your desk and save those 5 minutes? Are you going on a smoke break? Are you going whatever? So really accounting. But so one is time accountability to yourself of how productive you're being, because we're in a dangerous job, not dangerous job, but we're in a dangerous job for our egos. And that's when we go into the whole mental thing. Rejection is not something that the mind likes. Uncertainty is something that the mind doesn't like. So you will avoid making that phone call, that cold call to that one person by staying busy doing other crap. You know, just because you don't want to be faced with rejection. You don't want to be faced with uncertainty. You know, so you tend to stay busy doing stuff. Oh, I worked my ass off today. I did all this stuff. But you haven't had to make that call, make the hard call, take the chance that maybe they hang up the phone. Like, you know, it's ultimately back then it was cold calling. It was like, I door knocked, I cold called. So anyway, I mean, to step back, what Carlos did, which is something that's really valuable, is we had something called the sales engine, Jerry, which was basically every day we had a sales meeting at 7:30 in the morning, early in the morning. We did a little meditation. We did a little presentation. And then we ran around the room and you basically had to say to the team, yesterday I made this many calls, I set up this many appointments, I attended this many appointments, and then these are the deals I'm working on. And each deal had a stage. So remember, a deal, whether you're negotiating a contract or you're trying to negotiate a potential listing, you had you're in like present, negotiate, you know, so those steps that you would have to take. So you basically have to report. Now, this is all an honor system. Obviously, you could go out there and say, well, I made 100 calls. No, you have to go out there. So every once in a while, you'd be like, you report to the team, listen, I had an off day. I only made 10 calls and I didn't attend any appointments. So it was all about, really, it was creating the funnel. Where's my camera? The funnel. The funnel is, we're in a statistical thing. You make, you know, it's whether it's 100 emails or 100 phone calls ends up with 10 potential listings or 10 potential leads that end up being one potential client. So it's all about volume of calls, door knocking, et cetera. If you don't make the numbers, you don't get the leads, you don't get the sales.
But what a paradox or dichotomy, or I don't know the word, because you've got this environment where you've got these people who are, you know, we talked about
that. Super,
And then you've got like, did you make your calls? You weren't there. You didn't know they were going to list. Why didn't you know about them? You're out.
Yeah. So it was, but a lot of it was just, it wasn't a parent child, but it was a constructive criticism. He was really just, this guy was downloading his recipe of success. He was a very probably the number one realtor. Sadly, you know, personal issues happened in the recession, and he ended up imploding. But for 30 years, this guy was the number one agent in Miami. I mean, Carlos used to control everything. Uh-huh. Celebrities, Gloria Estefan. He was with Robin Leach and the last. I mean, Rosie O'Donnell. I mean, he sold all the big houses, and there was no one else. Now, I don't know if in Atlanta, the same thing. In, you know, 20 years ago, there was just a handful, 2-3 people that controlled the high end. Now in Miami, seriously, oof, there's probably 50-60 agents that control the 5 million and above.
Exactly. So you've got...
So the competition level has really kind of elevated. So now...
There aren't that many $50, $60 million listings.
There isn't. Yeah. So it's really... Yeah.
At all. But there's one and it sold for $8
million. Yeah. But it's the same thing. I mean, whether it's 50 or 8 or 9, it's ultimately the same thing. It's the same echelon of
Let's touch on that though, because you said like at that time there were 2 or 3 controlling that whole market, and now they're 50 or 60. What changed?
I think one, there was an influx of this luxury brands, you know, remember Sotheby's really didn't exist, and now Sotheby's came along. We were the first Sotheby's franchise. Mm-hmm. Carlos bought, he bought Soul Sotheby's, and later on ended up being one Sotheby's. But Douglas Elliman didn't exist, Corcoran didn't exist. You know, Compass obviously didn't exist. There wasn't all these like luxury brands. It was just like Coldwell Banker and like Keller Williams. And like, there was just like a few little like funny, like, and it wasn't like, maybe it was like the fact that reality shows hadn't started and everybody wants to be a freaking realtor now.
That makes like a difference. Those,
like,
right?
You know, back then it was like just a few people were realtors. Now it's like there's serious people jumping ship from corporate into real estate because one, if you do well, the money's crazy. I mean, you can have years that you can make, you know, million, $2 million, $3 million dollars that, you know, in corporate. When I worked as a country freaking director in Chile, working 60 hours a week, I was making $120,000 a year salary with maybe a $20,000 bonus. Now you can do that in one deal, one little deal, you know. It's like, so that's also attracted a lot of people that are somehow coming from other industries. So there has been a big influx of serious competition, and it's getting kind of ugly out there. And that's where we can talk a little bit about, I guess, keeping your head cool, keeping your composure throughout this whole thing, because it is an ugly, not an ugly, it's a tough market out there for competition. Even Sotheby's now, you know, when I first started with Carlos, we were 8 Sotheby's agents. Now we're like 900 agents, right? So, in theory,
how many is 900 you said now?
101 Sotheby's. So in theory, you know, I could show up the listing presentation and there could be 30 other
Sotheby's agents.
One Sotheby's agents with exactly the same, you know, listing presentation. So what's going to separate you? You know,
and what separate to that? What separates you?
So I think what really separates me is like, if I was to say one thing, one would be knowledge, for sure, because I don't say I'm the only one, but I am religiously today still showing up to the office 8 o'clock in the morning every day. And I spend at least an hour and a half. That was also part of the Carlos Justo indoctrination, you know, organize your day. The perfect day should be from 8, you know, 1, you know, eat well, be healthy, or, you know, exercise. You have to be a mental and physical good condition. You can't be, you know, just, you know,
well, there's out of shape and overweight,
physical, mental,
spiritual.
You know, so physical, mental, spiritual. So that, and then organize your day. Don't start scheduling appointments at 9 a.m. for showing. No, you control your day because you have to have 2-3 hours at the beginning of the day to organize your day, make the calls, follow up, et cetera. Then start showings and meetings after in the afternoon, 11 o'clock in the morning afterwards. So you really have to do that. So I get in the morning and I go through the entire market, whether it's MLS, and I go to the tax roll and I'm constantly reminding myself and studying like this house sold. Wow, that's interesting. Why didn't I know about it? How long did it sell for? How long was it on the market for? I go into the tax roll. I look at the aerial picture. I look at Google Earth. I understand it. Every time there's an open house, I go to every single open house just not to have free lunch. I go to the open house to know the neighborhood, know the everything. So that's number one, power. And number one, it would be knowledge. Number two, honestly, is something that I bring back with Carlos, is really just have, and I don't know if it's my, it wasn't just Carlos. I was always like that. I am really unattached to money. I don't really care, Jared. I'm a very simple, humble person. I don't have a fancy watch on. I drive a 1974 International Scout. That's my daily drive. No. I drive an old car. You know, it's like, I don't have a Ferrari. I don't have a... I think it's cool. And just like, whatever. But it's like, but there's also one thing is like, in this business, unattached to the outcome is something that's hugely important, especially when you work the big leagues. The big leagues being like, if you're working with a hedge fund guy, if you're working with a guy who's worth $100 million, $300 million, $1 billion, these guys are used to smelling out rats. They smell people that are sales guys. They smell commission rep 2 miles away. I mean, they know these guys are just sales guys.
Well, so, we always, yeah, they're looking, they want to be able to trust you and they want to know that you're listening.
But the reason they trust you is because they have to truly believe and your body language has to truly portray.
And you can't fake that.
You don't care about the commission. That commission for me, that deal, that $20 million deal, as nice as it sounds, like $500,000, is not going to put my kids through school. I don't need that deal to pay for my mortgage. You should have your house paid for. Your car should be paid for. Your education should be paid for. Because if you need that deal to make the mortgage payment, if you need that deal to pay for your second Ferrari, there is no way you can mentally detach yourself from that.
And that is what will destroy you and destroy so many people.
100%. So this business is so dangerous because versus corporate, when I worked before that, every month, you know, you got your $10,000, you know, check every 5 or 2 weeks. And you knew how to plan. Here, all of a sudden, you have 2-3 months of great bonanza. Check for 300 grand, 200 grand, 50 grand, 80 grand. All of a sudden, you think you're the cat's meow. And you're going to the Porsche dealer, ordering a big one, buying yourself a new boat. And all of a sudden, guess what? This business is cyclical. All of a sudden, you're like, holy shit. You know, it dries off. And you're like, I've now got 3 lease payments, a boat payment, a car payment. You know, you're like,
no way to pay.
And there's no way physically, I don't think, physically and mentally, I don't think you can detach yourself
from the next deal.
You will smell like commission for the next deal. Yeah.
A couple of things. I want to repeat what you said so everybody gets like the whole concept because I'm taking notes and bullet pointing. Yeah. Sometimes you don't even know what you're saying and then pull it out of you. But first of all, like on that detachment, there's so many people go, oh, go buy yourself a house so you have something to work for, so you have to show up. That's the wrong way to show up. First of all, you got to show up for you, not for anybody or anything else. I mean, what great advice, but then the things like you talked about knowledge, like know your market, not like kind of, but like size of the lot, where it is, what it's sold for, what the history is, how old it is, what's right, like everything you could possibly know your market, that's your value. The next thing is you didn't really say this, but you talked about your habits, like your habits and your schedule. Every single day you get up, you learn the market, your mornings are planning your day, learning your market, making your calls, engaging
emails, stuff like that.
Your afternoons are meetings, appointments.
You have to go talk, and it's all based on. I did it a little bit different, and it's like, I'm sorry if I scatter in conversation, but we talked a little bit about the unattachment, the good advice, and the only way you can physically, and then they will, you can think you're really smart and say like, I'm not going to tell them that I really care for this commission. Your body language cares for the commission.
Oh yeah.
So be unattached to the people. I mean, I've said this story before, which is actually not a funny story, but I've worked with buyers and I don't call them buyers. I work with people that are potentially thinking about maybe making an acquisition. You kind of use that language to detach yourself from it because Miami is a place that a lot of people show up. And they're rich and they can buy Miami, they can buy Aspen, they can buy New York, they can buy Paris. And it's just a place they come to consider potentially buying. So if you go around thinking, I got this buyer, I'm going with this buyer, I'm going with this buyer, you spend a week with the guy.
And then all of a sudden,
like the last day, you sense that he's not buying and you go into shutdown mode because you've gone around in your head thinking like, this guy's a $10 million guy, this is a $300,000 commission. And all of a sudden the guy's like, I don't think I found anything. And at that point, there's two forks on the road. You can take the holy, like, and then your body language goes into like, oh, you disappointed me. You wasted my time, body language with the guy. Or you like take the high road and you're like, it was so awesome meeting you. And you drive him to the airport and you give him a hug and then you wish him well. And you say, listen, you know, next time I'm in Miami, hook me up or make sure you tell your friends about me because I'll tell you that's what you want. So, and they sense that. If they sense that, so usually what I do from the get-go, Jared, which is funny, is like when I work with an out-of-towner, there's two things that I've done to disarm. Usually I say from the get-go, I say, listen, I will spend as much time as you want, and I don't really care whether you buy. That's number one. So I lay the ground for the guy.
Great.
He's like, I'm just here to service you. I'm here to educate you. And more than likely, the answer would be like, Miami's not for me. And it's okay. So don't ever feel bad for me that you're wasting my time, because ultimately, I'm here to serve you. I'm here to serve. I'm here to educate you. And the answer at the end of the week or 2 weeks or a month could be, Miami's not for me. And it happens. I would say at least 50, 60% of the times that I've shown buyers, nothing happens. They don't buy Miami. So, so these are the guys that if you treat them well, they will send you referrals. Next time they're in New York or wherever, and they're like, they hear a buddy at a cocktail party saying, hey, I'm thinking of Miami. You're like, oh my God, you got to call my buddy Jorge. Let me pass you his number.
Yeah, your buddies, because that's the frame of mind that
that's what you want.
With an agenda.
Yeah. You want this guy who's just going to treat you well and have fun and knows the market really well and who doesn't really care whether you buy or not, who's not going to like be the typical realtor. You're going to put an offer?
Yeah.
I have never, Jerry, I've never said the words, do you like it? Or are you going to put an offer on that one? It doesn't come out of my mouth.
I do. Right. This is gross.
That shit has never come out of my mouth. They're just like, I've never said, you want to put an offer on that one? You like it? You want to put an offer?
Oh, and that just it's just like, talk about the wall.
But you know how many people say that? It's like, so I just show.
Wow.
And I just drop them off and I figure, listen, if they like it, they'll call
me.
Like, I like that one. You should
love that. Yeah.
So there's a couple of things that you can say. One, don't give up on buyers. One of my biggest deals that kind of broke my career was a $49 million deal that mm-hmm. I represented both sides. But this buyer in particular came to Miami for 7 years. He would come every year. He would say like, Jorge, I'm flying in. Can you show me some stuff? Pick the guy up, drive him around, show him 4 or 5 homes, drop him back at the hotel. And I'd be like, see ya. I never said once, like, hey, do you like this one? What do you think? Hey, you know. And the guy every year would call me. I would just like, what? Don't bother rich people. Don't freaking email them every single price reduction, every single post about me with my kids or whatever. No, or how great I am. I don't email my clients, especially the really important ones, more than once a year. You kind of leave them alone. It's kind of like remind them, because they're really busy people. You don't want to be like every single price reduction, open house. Every time I sell something, I sold. I'm great. So for 7 years, the guy would come by every year. He would come by every year, come by. And then the last year I showed him this one house and he's like, I like this one. Let's put an offer.
Okay. So lean in a little bit or shift your computer back. Cause like, there you go. And I'll talk again. Cause it echoes.
Yeah. No, I'm saying like after 7 years, you know, of coming every year, showing 3-4 houses. So I was in a sense.
Now, what price point was that one?
Remember? This was $49 million.
Right. I mean, $50 million.
Back then, the most expensive house ever sold in Miami was $22. So this was like double.
You like more than double the average sales price.
It was like a holy.
Right. So another thing about that, like, because there's so much focus on like how to get them to buy, how to get the deal, follow up.
Yeah.
It's build rapport, build integrity, build trust, make sure they know you're listening and you care about them. Mm-hmm. And also, like, it took me way too long in business to figure these things out. When you've got a buyer like that, you're learning the market. You're learning and seeing things in a capacity that you will never have. You will very rarely have the capacity to otherwise like harness it. Because if it's not this one, it's going to be one.
Exactly. It's 100%. It's a blessing, because every year I would actually get some really good kudos. So the worst thing that could happen, obviously, is he doesn't buy. But the best thing that happened is that 3 or 4 of these sellers that had these houses that were off market or on the market knew that Jorge Uribe was coming by with, this guy was a significant guy, obviously. He's one of those billionaire guys, et cetera. So they kind of knew that my clients that I was bringing by were very qualified. Now, whether they bought it or not, they saw me coming in through their house door with a guy that they knew who it was. And they're like, holy shit, this guy's, you know, he's got some good clients.
Exactly.
So it definitely helped my reputation with potential future listings, because they always knew that Jorge was, and for what you're saying, the knowledge of, I knew these houses now more intimately because I went to show them to this guy. Now, don't show up with fake buyers to try to do that, because integrity is important, obviously.
Exactly.
Some people go around with fake buyers. So that was one of the lessons, is like, don't give up on people, be unattached. Many times, Jerry, also what I've done in the past with these guys, from the get-go, I've actually talked them out of buying and I've talked them into renting. And that's also a little tactic, a little trick that's actually pretty cool. It's dangerous and you don't get paid, but you get paid on year two or three
They buy.
But when you tell him, he's like, listen, I'm not, maybe you should rent for a year or two and understand Miami and see if something that you like. Now, two things happen. They say, okay, great. They rent. Or two, they say, no, we want to buy anyways. But by you saying that, it showed them that you didn't care about the commission on the sale. That, because they know rental commissions are, you know, a fraction of a sale commission.
Right.
Well, so that was also something that I've always done with out-of-towners is I usually recommend, why don't you guys just rent, find a nice rental and understand the market, see if you even like Miami before you buy.
But having that conversation gets out for them, for that, for you, but also for themselves. Like, something like, these people don't know, but guys, what if you rent it? Because not only it's not about, like you said, detached from the outcome, it's like getting them to talk about what's really important. Mm-hmm. And that even helps them know when they hear their own answer. It helps them know where they stand.
Yeah, that you're worried about them, that you don't want them to make a financial commitment before they even know the Miami well, et cetera, et cetera.
Right.
So that's also another little lesson that, you know, just be with integrity, be with unattached to the outcome, be in a healthy financial place. We talked about it earlier, like my house is paid for, right? So I don't have a mortgage. I don't have a car payment. Right. I don't have my only obligation in my life.
My only
obligation reality is my kids' education. I send them to the best schools and I'm happy to. And that's, you know, it's a big commitment. My son went to, you know, university in London. My daughter's in Boston. It's pricey, but that's for me, that's my luxury, to send my kids to as best schools as they can afford, knowing that they'll never have a student loan. My dad did it to me. I'm paying it forward to them, you know, with the future, but I don't have a car payment. So I can actually stop working and they sense that. And that's why I'm trying to emphasize that the wealthier the clients, the more sensitive and the more trained they are at smelling rat, because rich people,
they're not trained. They're just used to it. So I'm going to,
they're just used to it. They're used to blood sucking leeches all their lives from everybody just trying to get something out of them.
Exactly. So this too, I want to repeat this for everybody to like stay on track with what you're saying. You're talking about like, know your market, have your habits to know your market, deliver to your clients to be there. And number three, like you literally went out of habits and pivoted into the last thing that you talked about, which is really where you're coming in, is your mind. Yep. Like you can't like fake this stuff. Meditation's great, but what's in there is coming out. So it better be some good stuff. Like on the bill's paid, it helps. Yeah. Whatever you get there and serve people. But yeah, keep going.
Yeah, no, so I mean like, you know, the reality is that, you know, we're hopefully superstar athletes, but you're really what our main muscle is our mind and our conversation and our ability to listen and our ability to interpret what people want you to say. Sometimes they'll tell you something completely opposite and you can sense that they're just saying it, but you know better. So it's one of those that our mind is something that everybody should practice, whether it's meditation, whatever works for you, to just, because it's amazing the amount of garbage that our minds have in them. And whether it's, I mean, Carlos made everybody go to Landmark Education. I mean, some people think it's a cult or it's frou-frou. It was all Landmark, basically, it was all based on, and everybody can research it, but it's they have all around the world. It's based on something called completing your past. Completing your past was getting rid of emotional crap and baggage that no matter how good you think your life is, everybody's got some emotional baggage about your dad said something to you when you were 8, who said you're never going to be anything, Jorge, and you carry that shit around, some sort of an ego thing. So it really kind of helps you, let's say, cleanse the garbage that's there. So that's number one. So Landmark is everybody should have, because ultimately we are high performing agents, but we don't throw a ball, we don't hit a bat, we don't hit it. The only thing that's going to make you high performance is your mind and what you do with it. Mind is knowledge. Mind is an attachment. Mind is listening. Mind is, what is it? Yeah. It's knowing how to, I took a negotiating class. No, that's not mind. I mean, a lot of people are like, I took this, you know, the realtor board had a, I'm a certified relocation specialist. I mean,
No. But I will say, I say it a lot on this show, never split the difference. Chris Voss, that's a mind. That's a mind.
It is.
But I want to repeat what you said for everybody again. Knowledge, habits, mind. And in your mind, It is actually like peeling back your own layers of bullshit so that you see your own bullshit, because until you see your own bullshit, you won't really see other people's bullshit. And when you can't see other people's bullshit, you can't really listen and hear what they need and want. And not only like, not like what they think they want and what they think they need, but what they really do to get to the end of the day and, or get to that deal and get to where everybody needs to be for what is the best thing, not just like hoping you make a deal and get lucky. That's just playing the lottery, which isn't really a very strategy.
That's right. Yeah, no, and then funny enough, it gets more and more complicated the higher you go in the price point. Because I mean, if it's a nice couple, you know, out of college and they're buying their starter home, they're not playing main games with you. They're not this, you know, they just want, you need to present their home and it's nice. You show them some good comps and you can pretty much get the deal done. But when you start talking about a guy that's worth hundreds of millions of dollars or whatever, they start playing games with you. I mean, it's all about like, blah. So it's like, I mean, I almost treat them like they're children. You know, you take the candy away. Like I've never called, you being direct with them. And then you're like, the worst thing for one of these guys to say is like, listen, I guess, you know, this house is not for you. You know, it's whatever. Don't worry about it. It's fine. Like, what do you mean it's not for me? Or whatever. Like, you know, so you
you're
take
so right. away.
You won't.
No, keep going. You're right. Like, yeah, you're so right. I'm not selling $50 million homes, but you're like, I know exactly
like,
what you're talking
usually
about.
Like the way I always, funny enough, whenever I get like a pocket listing or something like that, and I call my network of like high net worth guys, I've never called a guy and said like, hey, by the way, I think you should buy this or this is for you. I always call them up and say like, who do you know that would want this really awesome thing? You know, so it's like, and they're like, how come not for me? You know, but you would never like, I would never tell him like, I got the perfect house for you. No, he's like, oh my God, I'm like super excited. I'm like, Joe, you don't understand this listing I got. It's not on the market. It's amazing. It's 3 acres. It's 50 million, whatever. It's like, tell me like, you must know someone that would want this. You know, so immediately one, you're like, playing a little bit of your mind.
Don't weed me out, right?
You're not like, how come
not? What if they don't want it? You weed that out really fast because they're not, like, if they don't want it, it's going to bypass it.
So there's a couple things. So one of the things I discovered early on that Carlos did, funny enough, is that we never advertise. We don't spend money. We don't farm areas. I know it works and I know people do it. I don't farm. I don't advertise. I don't send flyers. I don't do magazines. When I get listings, I don't do mailers, et cetera, et cetera. It just simply, in my training, it didn't work. So I go in, actually, for my P&L or my profit and loss statement, when I get a listing of what I did to spend, I know a lot of our friends spend a lot of money in advertising. A lot of our agents spend $50,000, $100,000 a month. And it does work if you buy every single magazine over and over and over. But you better be committed. And you better be committed when you do that to spend the money, and you better be committed to have a big team because that's going to bring you a lot of business. And with that, you start analyzing smartly though, because I can do $100 million in transactions, but my profit is huge. I can have more profit in $100 million in transactions than a team that's doing $1 billion. No, not a billion, but let's say $500 million in sales, but they have assistants and showing agents and administrators, and they have an advertising budget of, you know, $150,000 a month because they buy every single magazine and they mail out to 5,000. It's true. My whatchamacallit is a lot more efficient. My profit and loss is
right.
Way more efficient.
There you go. Yeah.
You know, my old accounting background, but really what ultimately,
listen. And I want to remind a lot of the things you're saying, I just got to reinforce, like we're talking like you're top in the, not just the city, but the country. Using this approach. This isn't just somebody like, well, this is my definition of success. Yeah, it's yours, but it's other people's too. And it works.
The other thing that I really did that, also Carlos based, which is really my entire, let's say, feeder network. One obviously is from other realtors around the country that value me, because ultimately sending a referral out when it's someone really, really important. One thing is sending a referral that's a, you know, $1 million referral to, I don't know where. You're like, who cares? Who gets it? You know, it doesn't matter. But if it's your, let's say if it's someone in New York City who has a $10 million, $20 million potential referral to come to Miami, are you going to send it to the general office and just have it go to an assigned agent that you have no idea? It's like, hell no, these are my clients. You know, I want to make sure who's going to take care of them. So I end up being, I receive a lot of really good referrals simply from other agents, simply because they know who I am and they know it's going to be handled super professionally because of my ethics. And
you're not going to say you don't like it, you want to make an offer.
Yeah, so that one's really good. So doing this
ethics and right, yeah.
Yeah, so doing this system works for referrals because more and more in the higher end, because higher end referrals aren't going to go to your general Atlanta office and they get assigned by the manager. No, they get handpicked by the referral agent in Las Vegas who's sending it to Atlanta, and they know exactly it's going to Jerry because she's the person who's going to personally take care of my client. So it's very dangerous. I don't send a referral out to anywhere unless I know where it's going. And I vet the people who I'm going to refer it to. I want to make sure it's in the right personality, the right everything. So that's number one. And number two is how really the rest of my business, funny enough, is all based on when I first started real estate, I was very good friends with one of the top producing bankers here from Goldman Sachs. And I've said that story a few times before. And when you analyze our business, if you're in the investment banking business, if you're a money manager at a very high level, Goldman Sachs, JP Morgan, Morgan Stanley, whatever it is, do you ever see, and I always make fun of this, do you ever see your local Goldman Sachs banker sending you a flyer to your house saying like, call me, bank with me, or whatever. Picture him and his Ferrari, like with his watch, with his freaking, you know, Rolex, like, hey man, call me, I'll take care of you. No, you know, this is like Goldman Sachs bankers, you know, people that work for McKinsey, if you're a consultant, people that work for, you know, a top, if you're a divorce attorney or an injury attorney, maybe not so, but if you're one of the top corporate lawyers, they don't send flyers like, hey, you want to do a mergers and acquisitions? Call me, you know, whatever. So basically what I did is like, I spent some time with the guy and I'm like, how do you get your business? And it's ultimately, it's all based on, if you think of like a hub and spoke system where you have the principal in the middle and you say, who touches that guy? And you say like, the accountant does, the banker does, the yacht broker does, the airplane broker does, the realtor does, that all these people does. So there's a whole level, a whole circle of service providers that have this principle's trust. So the question is, I need to be friends with those service providers. And those service providers need to know me, they need to like me, and they need to know that if they ever refer me, that I am not just a sales guy, that I'm not a, you know, Toyota sales guy, that I'm not just a, hey, call me. Yeah, like, you know, my whatever. So it's like, so it's, you're working at the big leagues. This is, again, you're trying to get to that $20 million referral, $30 million referral. And so the same thing I said about don't give up on your potential buyers, also work that circle of service providers locally. It could be Atlanta, it could be, and this doesn't have to be the 20 million. It could be a 10 million, it could be a 5 million, it could be a 2 million. Everybody has a certain level of service providers. Stay in touch with them. Those guys 3-4 times a year. Hey, Peter, what are you doing? You want to have lunch? Hey, so-and-so, you want to have lunch? Hey, so-and-so. Spend the time, put them in a bucket. I always say the bucket of your sphere of influence is the same CRM that most people have or whatever you have, whatever system you use, doesn't really matter. Get 50 people, 100 people max. You can't have, oh, I have a database of 20,000 people. It's bullshit. That's it's useless. I don't mail out to 20,000 people because it's not my business plan anyways, but find 100 people. You can make a great business with 200 really qualified people, 200 bankers, lawyers, accountants, CPAs. Be friendly with them. They have to trust you. You have to trust them. Don't be a taker, taker, taker. You know, call the CPA and say, hey, I want to introduce you to this immigration attorney because he's great. Take them both out to breakfast. Prove value, give back. Don't just be that guy who's always like, give me a referral. Hey, you got a referral? Hey, you got a referral for me? It's like, dude,
I love you.
It's like, annoying. That annoying realtor always asking for referrals. No, like, know people that trust you and like you, add value, introduce them to other people that also will benefit their business. Talk to the trust attorney. He's like, what are you doing? What can I help you with? And then maybe help them with a business or a client. You add value. It's all part of the karma thing or whatever it is. Perfect story, Jerry. I'll tell you, 7 years with this trust attorney here in Miami. Most people would have given up. I knew the guy was awesome. Twice a year, went out to lunch, hang out, whatever. Most people that I know, realtors, if they follow that high intensity thing, would be like, this guy sucks. You know, it's been 3 years. He hasn't thrown me a lead. I'm moving to the next guy. I don't have time for this guy. He's not throwing me leads. No, maybe he's testing you. One, maybe he wants you to really understand you before he truly trusts you to be able to deliver his clients. Because to refer someone is extremely dangerous. If I refer someone and he's my valued client
I don't even like to refer landscape people. I give you like, here's four people, choose one. Because if you refer someone bad, it's on you. Like, oh, you referred me to that loser guy who like chipped me or whatever. So anyway, so 7 years go by, Jerry. All of a sudden I get this one call from Hal and he goes like, Jorge, so-and-so is going to call you. And I'm like, who is that? Oh, it's Billy Joel's attorney. And I'm like, what? I'm like, yeah. So I got a call from Billy Joel's attorney from New York. And he goes and said, like, Hal recommended you. You're the guy. Billy, you want to sell his house in Lagos. Just send us a proposal. So I sent him a proposal, sent him a really nice presentation. Here's the CMA. This is what I would sell if I whatever. And he goes, great. Send me a listing presentation. And that's it. I didn't have to compete against the Jills or whatever, all these other leaves or guys and all this stuff. Because it came recommended from a guy that they trusted. So they didn't say like, Jorge, show us your marketing plan. Are you going to spend $20,000 in flyers and all this other stuff? No, they knew I know what I'm talking about. So one of the things I've always done too, sorry if I'm scattering conversation, Jerry.
No, you're not.
But one of the things that I've always done to disarm, when people tell me like, I want you to spend $5,000 in magazines. And I'd be like, listen, it's not a matter of money because I have money. I'm just here to help you. I would rather you give me like your wife's favorite charity, Save the Whales, the Elephants, and I'll write you a check right now instead of sending it to those fucking magazines that are useless. So that's usually how I end up disarming them. I'm just like, just give me a charity. I'll write the check. I just don't want to waste advertising. I don't want to, if we start a relationship fooling each other, like if I tell you that magazine doesn't sell your house, is because I believe it doesn't, because I get money if I sell it, obviously. Now, if I go in with the premise, like most realtors saying like, I'm going to sell your house because I got all these flyers and all this other stuff, they're lying to you. So they're going out with the premise that those magazines and those flyers is to sell themselves, is to get listings. It's not to sell the property. So if they go in, so it's funny, I've done it before. I got a really big listing that I said, I bet you the next agent that comes in the door is going to walk in here with a stack of magazines. And she's going to plop them on the table. And she's going to be like, this is what I'm going to do for you, Mr. Seller. And the guy called me up like the next day. He's like, it's so funny. The lady showed up with a stack of magazines. And I was like, you called it. And I said, yeah. I said, that person is not going to sell your property. It's selling themselves. It's to get more listings. So it's like they're being disingenuous to begin with.
I do advertise in magazines too, by the way.
But stop advertising. No, but it works for you. But don't say it's to sell their properties.
Right.
The advertising in magazine is to get your business running, and it works.
Right.
Magazine advertising and farming an area works. Just choose your poison.
I love it.
If you go that business route, I'm telling you about the way I do business, which is a little bit different.
I love this. Yeah. No, but it's brilliant. I love it.
Yeah.
Okay. So there's an agent down there somewhere, and I forgot his name, but like if he pays to keep his picture off the internet or something. I don't know. We don't need to bring up his name, but anyway, I don't even know him, but he does he's in your sphere. And we're not going to say his name because we need to know about Jorge Uribe. Wait, Jorge Uribe.
Yeah.
Is that it?
Jorge Uribe. Yeah.
Jorge Uribe. That's pretty good for
That's very good for a green guy. It's not bad.
Yeah, exactly. I love you. Okay. So going into all that. So now we've gone from getting into the business, like you're like a corporate guy doing, being the good guy, doing your job. Now you're with these meditators that are super intense. You get your territory, but you've got to know the listing about it before it ever hits. Like talk about an accountability program. Wow. That's genius.
It was called the sales engine, basically, which was basically.
The pressure of that was there any anxiety where you're like.
Oh,
like,
totally. No, but you could actually do that. As practice, you could actually choose someone in your office that you can kind of like be accountable to each other. You know, it's good to be accountable to someone because there's a lot of solo operators. I happen to be a solo person. It's me and an assistant. I've never really had a team. I've never really played with teams. I didn't want to my mental, I just couldn't deal with dealing with people more. But the tough thing is in this business is being accountable and that accountability thing, Carlos really had it ingrained in us where you should know, you should not be lazy. You shouldn't sit on your laurels. You should know your market and make the calls. It's all a numbers game. Make the calls, make the meetings, go out. And you have to be mentally prepared to face rejection and face, you know, people hanging up and, you know, whatever, but it's okay.
Have the market knowledge, have the habits, and have the mind. Yep. It's really like
the mindset. And the mind is really difficult. The mind is a really difficult thing. We also, simple little things that you can do, you know, before you go to that listing presentation, you know, the thing that's going to be going through your mind, especially if it's a really competitive situation, is, you know, who else is going there? My arch nemesis is going to be interviewing there. And you go in there with already with some sort of a, you know, level of insecurity in your head. So your head is really, what your head is doing is your head is protecting you from rejection. Your ego is frail. Everybody's ego is frail. Anybody who says they're not is lying. Everybody, we all want to be accepted. It's in the Maslow's hierarchy of needs. We all want to belong. We all want to be accepted. So going to a listing presentation, whether it's a listing presentation or you're presenting an offer to a client, you know, it's very important to just sit in your car 5 minutes before you walk in, shut the radio off, calm music, relax, have a winning attitude. You know, Carlos would go through this whole, you know, we listen to Eckhart Tolle Power Now all day long in the car instead of listening to, like, you know, crappy Fox News or CNN or whatever, just bad, negative, negative, negative. No, it was all positive, positive, positive. But we would sit in the car after Eckhart, 2 minutes, shut your eyes, and just basically basic meditation is, imagine you walking in the room, you open up the door, you say hello to your client. Imagine what it would feel like giving him the listing presentation. Imagine you kick ass. Imagine him signing it. How does that make you feel? Blah, 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 blah. But what you're doing is like, why would a guy like Carlos, who is now a master, this guy is like a genius, 30-year, super successful, but he would do it every single time. Every single time we would go to a listening presentation.
Self-fulfilling prophecy, too. It's just self-fulfilling prophecy. It's like it creates your mind.
Yeah, but it's like, but I compare it the same way with, like, why does Tiger Woods practice 6 hours a day if he's already a good golfer, right? It's like, because these guys, it's psychological, it's mechanical, it's their thing. They're top-performing athletes at their top of the game. LeBron, anybody who's any sport or anything is constantly practicing and practicing and practicing. What do we got to practice? We got to practice is really our heads. Our heads are the only muscle that will make us successful or not. If we have crap and insecurity.
Even for an athlete like Tony Robbins, you know, like, Tony Robbins used to coach athletes who he knew nothing about their sport, but he knew it was in their head to get them to break through.
And athletes are worse. We actually got it much easier. I think we got it way easier than an athlete, because an athlete's got to deal with what we got to deal with, which is just the mind, which is super complex. But then now they got to deal with the whole muscle and perform and swing and audience and all this other stuff. We just got to deal with what the athletes got to deal with in their mind. Like, you know, hey, the game, you're losing the game. What happens? Your adversity, rejection, you're letting people down, all these mental stuff that athletes have in their head. So we just have the head part. So we have less excuse to perform worse. I mean, for us, it's actually easier. So really, we should always practice, you know, a little bit of yoga, a little bit of meditation, a little bit of, you need to be in a good place. Mentally, you need to be in a good place. Physically, you need to be in a good place. You know, food-wise, what you eat, don't eat crap, don't eat a lot of, you know, whatever. Be in a good place, hopefully in a relationship that's in a good place. You know, a happy marriage, a happy relationship, a, you know, boyfriend, girlfriend. Obviously, these are all things, because ultimately, these are all external factors that will affect you. These are all external factors that that will make you perform. If you just got into a fight with your boyfriend, girlfriend, a significant other, whoever, your kids, and you go into a prison and you've had all this, there's no way you can go in into, you know, and fire in all cylinders, you know?
And to know that, and not, don't BS yourself about it. Like, you really have to get it right. Like, don't be like, no, I'm fine. Mm-mm.
No, you have to truly, you have to really. There. I mean, I've had a couple people I've been kind of really blunt with a lot of people that have come to my office here in Miami and be like, they're realtors who are struggling, and they come to me and they're like, Jorge, you know, you got to help me. I'm dying over here. And I'm like, can I give you some advice? Get out of real estate right now. Just get out of real estate. Go find yourself a job. Take care of yourself. Take care of your finances. The way you're right now, you're just digging yourself a bigger hole, bigger hole, bigger hole. You're going to hell. I mean, this is like a plane that there's no way you can pull up. All you can do is just, if you're in that position that you're about to lose your house or whatever it is or whatever, and you're like in a really bad place, take a break from real estate. Just get out. Because this is the wrong profession to be in if you're in a bad place psychologically or financially. Go find a job. It's okay to listen. I've sold cars in Cayocho. I've worked as a busboy. I mean, there's no shame in work, and I've done everything. I've done landscaping. I've done mold remediation. I've just, you know, but work was work. Go find another job. There's always something you could do. Work at a mall. Just help get healthy again, and then come into real estate, because real estate is a place that your mind will. Oof.
Exactly. Talk about like a character building career.
Yeah. No, I mean, this business, honestly, I mean, it's for me, it's been the best thing in the world. I mean, it is really an amazing job done correctly, right? So, I mean, it's a fantasy job in reality. I mean, it's a fantasy job if you find yourself in a place that you work with clients that like you and respect you, you make a really good living. You're making a difference. I mean, you're really helping people in something that's exciting and fun. I mean, this is like, you know, their home. I've sold lots and now are built, and I get mails like, you know, from clients saying like, you know, this has been, you know, this is so awesome, Jorge. Thank you for finding this. I've had clients that say, I want to move to a condo. And I'm like, no, you don't. I want to sell you this house. And because I know better, and I move them. And now they keep telling me like, thank God you made me buy this house. And you've influenced people's lives. You've gotten good money. You meet every day, you meet someone super interesting, super like badass, who's done really well, and then you're sharing an intimate moment with people that are really interesting. I mean, think how blessed we are with some of these, you know, superstar people or whatever, whoever, it doesn't matter whoever they are, that you're spending intimate time with people and they're telling you about their life, their kids, and then you get them in a house, you get paid, and now you've, versus when I work corporate, listen, I was in finance and you're like there like all day doing the same thing, the same clients, the same, you know, it's like you get your paycheck and it's like, you know, pulling the cog every day, like year after year after year. Like now it's like every day is like a different client, a different house, a different something. So it's really, you know.
You're learning and building character, by the way.
Learning. And then I learned so much from being in a car with someone who sold a company. And I'm like, it also helps to come back from, I mean, to have, I guess maybe it helps me to have my business background when I'm like, you know, how did you start that business? Tell me about it or whatever. I mean, and then you can have that conversation. It's awesome. It really is like you're having intimate moments with the guy who sold a $49 million house. A lot of people in the world would want to have breakfast with him because he's just super like, you know, billionaire guy. And now you spend hours and hours with these people, just knowing them as human beings. It's really, and you get paid obscene amounts of money for doing so. No, I'm kidding. But it's a lot of hard work, but it's good.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's just like literally like frame things for yourself a little. So final three questions we end every interview with us. Question one, what have you found is your most powerful resource or tool in being a successful agent?
For sure. I'm going to split that one in two, knowledge and mental control, just being in a happy place mentally. People really want to be around me because I don't sound like a happy guy, but I'm just a calm, relaxed, grown up in the room. So that's been very helpful for my mind, having a steady place in my mind.
I love that, because like this whole interview's been about that. And of course then I'm gonna like slip in number three, habits.
Yeah.
But with knowledge and mental mind, you get habits. Okay, next one, book. If there's one book we've just got to read that's life-changing for our business or life or yours, what is that book?
I was going to say The Secret. No, I'm kidding. It's The Secret. No.
When that book came out, my assistant would go, shh.
Yeah.
Anyway, but what is the book?
Audiobooks. I don't read audiobooks. I mean, I've heard every single Eckhart Tolle, The Power Now.
Eckhart Tolle.
The Power Now for me was life changing. I mean, it really was.
The Power of Now. That's it. Did you read? Is that the Awake? Is it the Awake? Now I don't even know, but I listened. It's his.
I actually just listened to him. I didn't read it. I just, his audiobook.
I listened to it, but there was
his voice is just so awesome. Yeah. Anyways,
I love his voice. He's like that German. He's like so calm. But what is the Awake? The Awake, the something about being awake. The other book, have you listened? I'm going to send it to you.
Send it to me.
The Power of Now, but the other one, you'll love it. It actually, something about it makes me laugh, even though it's serious. It's just, I don't know, just it's but very, very enlightening at the same time. Last thing, if there's anything that you would have us remember, if we just forget everything else from this interview, what is it? or conversation, I really should say.
If there's one thing that you could remember from this interview, just integrity. I mean, just be a person of integrity and be always thinking of your client's best interest way before yourself. I am so unattached to my own personal needs, and I'm all about service, service, service. I mean, I'm just like brainwashed about servicing. Maybe it's cultural too. Keep in mind that Colombians, not to like boast about our culture, the Ritz and the Four Seasons always hires Colombian waiters because Colombian people, their pleasure in serving, like in Spanish, we have a saying in Colombia, which con mucho gusto means with much good, like I'm like super happy to serve you, like a Colombian waiter in a restaurant. And it's all based on, it's a cultural thing of service, like excellence of service. It's cultural, but I truly live excellence of service. And it's all based on like just the client's happiness and best interest before yourself. Like if it means staying up late or getting, today I was at 6 a.m. because a guy wanted to see a sunrise and I was there. I woke up at 5:30, just to make the guy happy. I could have made up anyways, but I'm just about service, 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 service. Go the extra mile and service. That was that I would say.
Jorge Uribe in Miami with one set of beans. Thank you so much. Thank you. It's so good to see you.
Bye, dear. See ya.
Thanks for listening to the Jerry Metcalf Podcast, where top real estate agents tell how they do it. If you like this episode, please share it with friends. To find more episodes, search Jerry Metcalf Podcast on any platform for podcasts or go to jerrymetcalfpodcast.com. That's JERREMETCALF podcast.com.